I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos. Hello and welcome to episode number 89 of the Ministry of Arts podcast. I hope everyone is safe and well out there. Firstly, I've got to say thank you so much for all the love I got for last week's episode, which featured Richard Wilson. I mean, he's one of the country's finest sculptors, and he really has got a way of sort of drawing you into the workings of his mind, which sort of, in a roundabout way, leads me on to this week's guest, Ben Tallon. I've known Ben for a couple of years. He was friends with Ray Richardson and had a studio in the same block in Woolwich. I'd been listening to podcasts for about 6 months when Ray told me that he was going to feature on one called Arrest All Mimics. And although Ben was a well-known illustrator and most of his guests were from the illustration world, he often spoke to people from any creative background. And although I'd been interviewed a few times on radio and TV, Arrest All Mimics was the first podcast that I was featured on. And it was as a result that I started this podcast. So is the one to blame? Let me tell you a little something about Ben Tallon. Ben Tallon is an illustrator, hand painting lettering specialist, author and host of, as I just mentioned, Arrest All Mimics podcast. He has developed a unique, organic and energetic brand of image making with many clients including Channel 4, The Guardian, WWE, Penguin Books, the Premier League and UNICEF among many others. His style is highly diverse and works across many disciplines for print, digital, animated, live, set design and large scale media. Ben's passion for the creative industry and forward thinking led to him having his debut book, Champagne and Wax Crayons. This month, October 2020, Ben is releasing another book called Your Mum, a rancid collection of short stories, moments and embarrassments from Britain's cultural underbelly. He invites you to take a naughty peek through the two-way mirror into all things dubious and dirty at the arse end of British life. He's a great guy, is Ben, so come and find that out for yourself. This is episode 89. Recorded over Zoom. I have 7 questions that I ask each artist.
Yeah.
The first being, how would you explain what you do to someone that didn't know your work?
It's a good one. I make images, but essentially I make images and now I also write stories for a range of media. So, you know, advertising, editorial stuff, self-initiated work, sport. It's quite broad on the illustration front. But yeah, essentially make images, make artwork for visual communication. And I write stories for my own books and for one-off pieces. And I also write, you know, the odd opinion piece in the arts and things like that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I also run a podcast.
Just give a quick shout for your podcast. We'll mention it again nearer the end.
Yeah, it was called Arrest All Mimics, which I still to this day think I got too clever with the title. But there we are. It's established, so I can't really change it now.
Well, it was the first one that I guested on. I've been on a couple of radio shows before that. And I presumed, wrongly, that a podcast would be the same setup as a radio show. And when I appeared on yours, you did make it look rather easy. Gave me the idea to start this one. That's exactly how this one started, was through guesting on yours, which was episode 99, after hearing Ray Richardson, who was a dozen or so before that.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, no, it was brilliant. I mean, I've loved everyone in different ways. And it's just like you said, it was the same thing. I listened to a number of sports and arts podcasts, and I hadn't ever occurred to me until the guy who runs my illustration agency suggested it. Said, you love talking about this stuff, and, you know, would it be such a leap to learn how to put a microphone in front of you and edit? I think you'd be good for doing a podcast.
Yeah.
And then suddenly all these ideas from the ones that I'd been listening to came in, and, you know, one thing led to another and just got stuck in, really. So, you know, it's still very rough around the edges to this day, but I just find it a really great excuse to talk to interesting people and learn a lot of things.
That's exactly the reason. When was your first interest in art?
Well, I guess like a lot of kids, I drew from an early age, and so I drew wrestlers and footballers primarily, and that was, you know, pretty much stopped and started there. But I was fortunate enough to have a mum who'd done art at college, so, you know, she never pressured me, but it was always encouraged. My creative side was always encouraged by her and grandparents and my dad and everyone, really. I got a creative uncle as well who'd written comedy for people like Bob Mortimer and all sorts. So
No,
it was always around me, but no one ever put pressure on, but no one ever no one dissuaded it either. So I had that lovely balance. I didn't get that rebellious teenage streak and think, no, I don't want to draw, because no one was pressuring me. So that was nice. I just kind of drifted my way through. But yeah, from the age of 4 or 5, I've just drawn whatever I was interested in, really.
Yeah.
But I guess like a lot of people, not until mid-teens, 14, 15, did I start to get an inclination that there could be a living to be made from it. You know, and like most people, didn't really have a clue what that might look like.
And was it always illustration you wanted to go down?
No, I had no idea what any of it meant, to be honest. I was lucky enough to, I kind of got my hackles up when it came to work experience, and I didn't want to do, you know, the jobs that were on offer. Nothing interested me, and I've always struggled to get motivated with anything I'm not passionate about. And at school, you think that's because I'm lazy or I'm not good at it, and you don't think about character. And then luckily, one of the tech tutors actually at school, he was the woodwork design and technology tutor. I went to him because he was one of the more free spirit tutors, and I just he asked me how I was getting on, and I said, I haven't found anything, I haven't really looked for that much. And he said, well, what do you like to do? And he was the first person to ask me a very important question, and I said, I like drawing, you know, like. And he said, right, okay, leave it with me. And he got me and 3 other kids into a 2-week work placement at the local art college. Just sat us in the corner of a studio, let us roam around, you know, checked in on us every once in a while. And they got us in like a life drawing workshop and things. And that was the first time that I thought, I love everything about this place that's going on here. Everyone's wearing their own clothes. You know, people can go for a coffee or a piss when they want. And
but how easy is that? Is it for who was it? Wasn't a teacher. You say it was a...
It was a teacher, but he taught the design and technology. So you did the woodwork and the, you know, various other technology related subjects at school. So you didn't see a lot of him. He was just tucked away in his studio. But for whatever reason, I felt like he might be the one to ask. Yeah. And he made a call to the college and they said, send him down. Yeah. You know, it was a bit easier back then in terms of there wasn't 25 forms to be filled out. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Health and safety loops to jump through.
Exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, how good is that someone just sort of listens to what you're saying and points you in the direction that they feel you should go in? Best bit of guidance you could have, I suppose.
It really is really a really fundamental, simple question that a lot of people to this day forget to ask themselves, ask others, but what do you like to do? It's simple, you know, it doesn't have to be overcomplicated. Yeah. What gives you pleasure as a pastime, you know?
And what course did you do when you left school at college?
So I stayed on an extra year at school because I was very deluded and thought I could play for Leeds United until the age of 16. I studied sport and I was dismal at football. I wasn't dismal, I was less than average.
Yeah,
and right. And I realized, you know, the reality kicked in my last year at school, and I thought,
in your head you were Pele.
Yeah. Tony Yeboah, actually, but yeah. So I started thinking, well, like, there's not a lot else I like, but I still love drawing, so I'd better look into that. So I stayed on 1 year to get art GCSE and basically sat in the corner of that year below me to get, you know, to get that until I could go to college. Luckily for me, during that time on the work placement, they'd said, look, you know, you've got a good drawing and we like your attitude. If you do want to come down here, give us a shout. We're sure you'll be fine to get a place on the course.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. So I started a year late, 17, and I did a BTEC National Diploma in Graphic Design, which was essentially a foundation course. We did everything.
Yeah. And did you go on from there?
Yeah, I went on. I did a year at... By this point, I knew more what I liked to do. I still didn't know what any of it was. I still didn't know the difference between fine art and illustration and graphic design. But graphic design seemed to encapsulate a lot of the things that I liked. So I went and started. I did the first year at Bradford College of a degree in graphic media communications. And that was good because there was four pathways, basically. I think it was audio, visual, illustration, graphic design, and... I can't remember the other one. Anyway, it was good. It was a mixed bag. But by the end of that, I had realised that maybe I should be moving away from home to try and get a bit of independence. And they got a sense of that. And they basically said, look, you try and draw everything, even the hard typography modules. You're drawing the type, you know, we can't get it out of you. Go and do illustration. And they pointed me in the direction of Preston, which turned out to be the right one for me. So I went on and studied illustration at degree level.
And when did you finish that?
2006.
And did you step straight into illustration work from there?
It was 2 years before I went full time, or at least had a good crack at going full time. And I had a very tough 6 months in respect of motivation. I found the cutoff of 7 years of education and design very tough because suddenly you don't have a studio space, you don't have all the people knocking around to bounce ideas off. Tutors are not there to ask questions. And suddenly I was in my bedroom working full time at Waterstones, and I had a B&Q garden table, and that was as close as I got to a studio space. So it was very hard, you know. I didn't know really what to do with it anymore from there. So that first 6 months I just worked full time, went to the pub a lot after work, and you know, I was doing bits. I probably did about six pieces off my own back, but they weren't really anywhere near where I wanted to go. And then a friend who'd done a furniture design course, he wanted quite a big workshop, and he'd found this knackered old... It was a farmer's stable in Preston on the outside of a park. And it was dead cheap. It was absolutely freezing. You had to wear about seven jumpers and halogen heaters on. But at that point, we were a bit more hardy, and it was incredibly exciting. And there were five of us that took that place on, and I think it was 40 quid a month, you know, so it was nuts and bolts level. But it really did restoke the excitement and made me want to actually make some sense of what I'd spent all this time doing. So, no, there was a two-year gap, but I actually placed a lot of value on that time, you know, because... I worked in countless temping jobs after Waterstones and met all these characters and got lots of different, both ideas, but more importantly, a sense of what I really didn't want to be doing with my life, you know. And that motivation of working in all them full-time jobs really did put the fire under me to make use of my skills, you know, and really get a portfolio together and start promoting as an illustrator.
And did you always want to work for yourself rather than a company?
Yeah, I didn't have much of a sense of what a company would look like because... I'd done this illustration degree. I was very aware from an early stage on that course that it was freelance. There was very little roles. And even if you had a role, you were under someone else's banner and you would be steered in the direction. And I just didn't like the idea of that, you know. So I knew that it was going to be cut for freelancing for me and starting out in newspapers and magazines. So at least I had that much to go at. I always knew that at some point I'd have to start trying to knock on a few doors in magazines and newspapers. So that's, eventually when we got this space, it was like, okay, let's get a portfolio together now and some postcards and start sending them out.
Nice. And did you find any frustration when you tried looking for work after you'd built your portfolio up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, massively. I guess I'd be surprised if there's many people who don't, but it was very much maybe five replies per 100 emails. And of those five, you'd probably get four that said, you're on file, we'll give you a shout if anything comes up, which is exciting for about 10 minutes, and then you think, oh no, I've been brushed off like everyone else. And then you get the one that actually took the time to have a, you know, maybe make a phone call and chat to me about my work or my ideas. And you got a sense they were a bit more interested. But there was a lot of that. It took about, oh, how long did it take? It took a while to get the first job. Maybe about six weeks or so before I got my first commission. And that was, by this point, I'd quit my job at Preston City Council, where I was a recycling officer. It was the best temping job that I got and made a lot of good friends in that job. But I saved up essentially enough money to live off for 3 months. And that's what I did. So it was, you know, there was a bit of pressure, but not as much pressure had I just gone into it without any savings. And it was just a lot of that, a lot of emails, cold phone calls, which I hated doing, but I felt they got a certain degree of response. And that was it. And eventually it was my love of football that you know, opened the door a little bit. It was when Saturday Comes that gave me my first commission, which is like half fanzine, half monthly magazine. And they liked the rough around the edges feel of my artwork at that point. Yeah. And they especially liked the fact I was a big fan and they wouldn't need to spend the time educating me on the game. You know, they knew I was up to date on the topics. And what I used to do is look what was the big story that week, and I would actually draft up a sample and kind of crudely paste it into context in their magazine.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And send it to the art director, and I think he liked the fact that I was really a bit bullish about wanting to work for them, you know. And
similar to what they used to do in the newspapers, sort of like satirical shout on the day, like Gerald Scarfe, for instance, that sort of thing.
Yeah, very much so. Yes, I mean, in terms of Scarfe and Ralph Steadman, they often get flagged up as, you know, they've both got the same aesthetic that my work has in terms of it's got that human hand, it's got splashes, it's got mistakes in it, you know. And for a time in my first year at uni, I practically tried to be Ralph Steadman and eventually realised what we all realise, that you've got to find your own way, and kind of took what, you know, and I started to realise that it was the aesthetic and it was the energy that I liked, but it didn't need to look like his stuff. To, you know, I could do it my own way. So that's, but those two were very much, you know, influences along the way.
Well, you've mentioned there a couple of influences. If there was you and five other illustrators, past and present, who would your five guests ideally be?
In terms of podcast or spending time with, or
both, either.
Well, Ralph Steadman, without a doubt, is one. He's in there. I'd have to say Quentin Blake, just because I've got such a love for those Roald Dahl books, and again, the irreverence in his style. Who else springs to mind? I really like, there's an illustrator called Lucinda Rogers, and she's still very active now, but she had a fantastic, she draws live on location. And she used to do a lot of regular stuff for The Guardian. So I was well aware of her work at university. And that really spoke to me as with someone who had this messy, loose style. But the energy in her work is fantastic, in the way she captures a place. I mean, my interests are quite broad. So I look kind of around illustrations. I would name Ray, you know, Ray Richardson, mutual friend of ours. I'm constantly in awe of his work because it's not because I know the guy. It's just... That I always describe it as being incredibly cinematic. It's, you know, his images have such a punch to them, and feel like, I always said to him, I feel like if you could climb into that image, you'd be right there in the film, in a noir film or something.
Yeah.
So Ray is fantastic, and I often point people in the direction of his work when it's someone who has any semblance of that cinematic feel about theirs. I would say go and study Ray's compositions because they're incredible.
So well, there's not many artists, Ben, who are... who, when you look at their work, you're interested what's around the corner or off canvas. You know, you're as interested in what's going on around the corner as you are of what's going on his canvas.
It's completely that, isn't it? Yeah, you wonder, you know, these moody characters that are in there. I want to know what's happening in that bigger picture and what, you know, what's got that going on that moment. And it's like you've paused a much bigger moment. That's what his work feels like, which is incredible. Who else? Tom Gold, you know, Tom Gold is he does comics, but the humour in his work, he did a talk for us in our third year at uni, and I remember finding that quite an important turning point in terms of actually speaking to someone who was big in our industry at that moment. And he had a lot of time for the questions many questions I threw at him, but he used to do his own press of little graphic novels, limited run, and he'd sell them in independent bookshops like Magma, which were in Manchester. And I loved that he was doing exactly his humour and his characters, and he found a way to monetize that. And he does really well for himself now. He does comics for The New Yorker and The Guardian and all sorts, but he's still doing his own books and his own zines. And
yeah,
as someone who started writing and going down an indie publishing route, it's kind of roared right back into focus now as Tom's work and how he used that model, to forge his own path. So yeah, I think that's five.
Well, when
we
first met, you also had just brought out a book, Champagne and Wax Crayons.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, that was the debut. So that was a traditional publishing deal. So I did that with Lid, which is a boutique business publisher in London. And it like most things that I do, it was very accidental. So I basically started ranting on a blog about the frustrations of freelancing. It was 2 years into being full-time and I hit like an 8-week dry patch and got really frustrated. And, I was annoyed that everyone was showing off these lovely studio shots on Instagram, but nobody was...
A little bit of envy gets you going.
Yeah, and in fairness, nobody's going to be posting pictures of themselves sat there in their underpants at, 10 in the morning, are they? But... Right. That was what I felt. I felt like there was this underbelly that no one was talking about and this frustration. So I just kind of did it for me, really, to vent. But what I found was a small handful of people loved it and got in touch and said, I really resonate with this honesty and I'm going through all the same things in a different part of the country or whatever it might be. So I just kept doing it. And then kindly somebody got back to me and said, you've got a strong editorial style. I don't know if but I'm from that background and you do have a good writing style. And I had no idea because I hadn't written since GCSE, really. But I've always been a keen reader and I've always loved storytelling in its many forms. So I just kept going off that confidence boost. And, the audience didn't get massive, but it was big enough to keep me going each time I made a post. And as luck would have it, my now wife, Laura, was working at that publisher. And the editor there was a mutual friend of ours and he asked to have a look at it and they offered me a deal and, it had its ups and downs, but it got out, he got a deal in Japan, which was amazing. It got translated by the Tokyo publisher and the feedback in the industry is incredible. It's been 100% positive, which has been amazing really as someone who started out ranting. But yeah, it was great. And actually that book was what got me talking at unis and doing little opinion pieces and all that snowballed into the podcast, which has opened loads of doors. So that was a bit of a career shift, really. It kind of changed. It switched from a goal-driven thing where I wanted to work for this mag and that client and win that award. And after that, I thought, no, I'm just in love with doing whatever it is that's getting me going at any given point creatively. And I've done that and trusted my instincts ever since. And it's, I've enjoyed the path it's taken me on.
And then recently, you've just brought out another book.
Yes. Yeah. So what happened was I did that and continued to love writing. And I wrote opinion pieces for Design Week and Creative Review and a few other people and always loved that. But underlying was always this notion that I might have it in me to write fiction, but I wasn't sure. And I still didn't have the confidence to jump off and do that. But eventually I did. I think it got to about 2019. And this was well into the time when I knew I was going to be a dad. And I'd started to try my hand and again, got good feedback from the few people that had looked at these things. And I just loved it. And I whether I was technically up to it yet is one question. But I knew for sure that my ideas were different just by being an absolute weirdo.
Yeah.
And that these characters I was creating had some legs. And so I just started to do it. And my idea was, if I can get 30-odd stories in the bank by the time I'm a dad, I won't feel bad about not writing them because I've got them there.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. And so what happened then? What happened was during lockdown, I created an Instagram account called Stories for the Apocalypse just for my writing, basically, because I wanted a space where I wasn't overly precious, where I could just do a quick illustration, share a chunk of a story and get it out there in the world. Because by this point with the podcast and Champagne, I knew that just putting something you're passionate about out into the world brings many rewards. So I just wanted to do that in a way where I wasn't sitting on it like every other artist and, guarding it. So I started keeping a daily diary, and it was fictitious diary of what was going on in suburbia during lockdown. So it was kind of a behind the curtains, this couple have spent 20 years avoiding each other and suddenly they're under the same roof and wanting to tear each other's throat out. And that was, it was a very black comedy kind of, but also a poignant look at how people were either coping or not coping with this unprecedented event. And it was very short, very snappy, about 20,000 words, but it was a diary format book. And I basically just chucked that out there as an ebook, as an experiment to try and learn the platforms and see what the indie market was like. And then the other book that you're referring to, so the one I'm really getting behind at the minute, is it's called Your Mum. So it's like, it's a collection of very down and dirty stories. They range from, you know, just basic. So basically, they're all built around items that we see in the streets in Britain. Things that characterize our streets for better or worse. You know, I'm not, there's no judgment in this book. It's just depictions of these things. So a mattress, a knackered hubcap off a car, cigarette butts, a glove on a fence, you know.
Yeah, a chained up bike frame.
Exactly that. Yeah. So it's all those, anyone who spent any time on our streets will recognize each of these items. And that started because a friend of mine and I had an ongoing, you know, we would just send pictures of these things to each other and go, what's happened there? You know, why is there one?
Add a little backstory to it.
Exactly. So at the time I was writing these stories without much direction. I thought some of these really fit these items. I wonder if there's more to this project than just a montage of these items. Maybe I could brief myself for a story by each of these things and just think laterally about it. So that's what I did, and that's what the book is. So it's called Your Mum and Other Stories from the Back Streets of Britain. Excellent. And it ranges from, you know, there's one story in there just about a kid turning up from the estate when I was playing football on my own and trying to flick a condom at me with a stick. that's one story. And then there's another one that's about quite poignant, and it's just about my experience of like the Manchester homeless community. And so, for example, that story is anchored to the coffee cup. So I stumbled upon this tented homeless community, which is under the arches in Manchester, just off of Deansgate, if anyone knows it. And it's kind of trapped in between all these luxurious apartments that are being thrown up at a crazy rate. And I just found it really sad. And you know, this guy was using his coffee cups as bits of furniture within his little tented home. And I just found it incredibly sad. And so some of the stories are serious, but the majority are quite black comedy and just, they're just moments. It's a bit of a mood book, really, all built around these things. But it's an incredibly personal project, and I've had so much fun doing it. So I thought, well, I've got enough connections to do this indie style now and see if I can make that model work and keep a better share of the profits, essentially, because, anyone who's done a traditional book model knows that unless you manage to hit like a J.K. Rowling or a major success, you're not really going to see all that money and all that much money in royalties. And that's not what drives me. But I thought, if I'm putting this incredibly personal thing out there that I've worked very hard on, I don't want to see that kind of pound per 13 quid coming back again. Yeah. You know, I want to pay the money up front, commission the designer, the editor, and see if I can make it work and, you know, make enough money to justify it. So that's where I'm at with it.
How much is it, Ben, and where can people buy it?
It's $9.99 basically plus postage, and I've just launched a new website called bentallenwriter.com, and there's also the ebook, which is out there on all the platforms, Amazon and Google Books, and there's going to be an audiobook thanks to a good friend of mine who works at a music studio and got me some time. So
superb.
If you want to hear this lovely voice telling you the stories.
How is your mum spelt?
That's a good question. It's actually spelled Y-A mum. There was quite a bit of conversation between my editor and I about that, because he's from Belfast originally. So he suggested the title, because one of the stories is called Your Mum. And he said, how about your ma, Y-E-R-M-A?
Yeah.
You know, and then he said, but hang on, you're Northwest, so wouldn't that be your mam? Yeah, so we went with your mum in the end. We thought
the local dialect can confuse, can't it? So... Yeah, go for something everyone knows and you're quite all right.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got the final question I've got out of my seven is, what would you like to be if you wasn't an artist?
That's a good question, you know.
Play for Leeds?
Yeah, if we're taking all reality out of it, then of course, either be a Leeds Rhino or a Leeds United player. But I don't have something with conservation or animals, perhaps, you know.
Maybe
dog walker, you know. There's a local dog walker who has about 16 at any given time, and she absolutely lives it. She puts a calendar out every year with pictures of the dogs she walks and gives it to the people who are regular clients.
It's not a sleigh rider who's lost her sleigh, is it?
there's a short story in that.
All right, well, Ben, that's all my stories. That's all my questions asked.
Brilliant.
All the very best with your book, man.
Thank you, mate. I appreciate that. Yeah, no, it's been a fun project. So yeah, just have a look on the. Well, I'm on social on at Ben Tallon, one word, and I'm constantly putting out, you know, little videos with guest readings and sharing some of the stories and whatever else to push it. So yeah, come and find me on there if that sounds good to anybody.
All right, mate. So I'll include all those Instagram pages and websites that I can in the intro and outro of this podcast.
Fantastic, and thanks for your time, Gary. It's been good to catch up.
Very best, mate, and thank you for the allowing me on your podcast, first of all, because I wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for you doing that, I'm sure.
Oh, you're most welcome, mate. It was one of my favourite episodes, and you know, it's nice to know that they had that knock-on effect, you know, because again, we all have those kind of accidental people along the way who've triggered an idea or whatever, so it's nice to be able to do that.
Brilliant. Well, thank you for your time, mate.
My pleasure. Cheers, Gary.
Cheers, Ben. Tell him, mate.
Bye-bye.
There you have it, Ben Tallon. Another person who's just got that tone and manner of speaking that just draws you in. As he said there, his book, Your Mum, can be purchased on his website, which is bentallonwriter.com. And it's only $9.99. There's a few readings being done over on social media by people that come from the area in which the stories are based. There's a great one with Sean Ryder and, of course, Ray Richardson. And changing the subject to talk about my handmade barbed wire Dark Stars. They're now available in the Ben Oakley Gallery in Greenwich. And tomorrow I'll be talking to the Subversion Gallery in Glasgow. Hopefully they'll be up there by the end of the week. They're just £99 and an addition of 30. And you can go over to my social media to see exactly what they look like. And that is at MizogArt, MizogArt, or Ministry of Arts Org. Well, that's about it. So like I say each week, on whichever platform you listen to this podcast, you should be able to leave a comment. If you could do that, that really does help us to get noticed and anybody else looking for an art podcast. So, thanks for listening, and until next week, ta-da.
Softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.